The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Thoughtful. Did you know that all of a sudden they start doing something with their nose, it means they're lying or exaggerating, or they have something hanging and they can feel it. But you know, there's a lot of things that our body language says, and if we're not careful and understand the underpinnings, our vocabulary can say one thing and our body language and our tone can scream something else, and it causes mass confusion in our communication with our spouse. And so those are the first two things, or those are the first two things, vocabulary, our tone, or our unspoken communication. Third thing that is an underpinning is that men and women process in a fundamentally different way. Now, you're going to say, well, duh, we know that. But let's put that in a little bit of context. There's a great book up at the bookstore, if you feel like reading more about this, called Men Are Waffles, Women Are Spaghetti. Okay? And basically, that's kind of the concept that we're going to talk about just briefly here. How many of you have ever been to a hotel? Okay? Anybody? Raise your hand. This is interactive. Okay. Been to a hotel. Okay, picture yourself walking into the hotel. You turn and close the door. On the back of the door, what is usually there? A map. A map of the hotel. Picture that map in your head. You've got all of these different rooms, and then there's a hallway, and the rooms have doors and they close, and most of them anymore don't have adjoining doors, and many of the better hotels are soundproof. Okay? Your brain is like that, guys. My brain is like this many times. We have rooms that are not connected through adjoining doors, and they are soundproof. And when we walk into that room, it's not connected to something else in our life, and we can't hear things outside of it. Let me give you an example. An email room. A football room. How many of you have been watching a football game, and there's been people talking all around you, never realized they were talking to you? I've been there. Okay? I've been there a dozen times. Okay? But what happens is, guys, we can focus so closely. We step into a certain room. It's a certain category in our mind. And we focus greatly there. And we've got a real advantage of being able to focus narrowly in that place. But many times it doesn't touch anything else. And so we don't even consider what's going on around us. Let me tell you what some of the results of that might be. I was on Facebook, and there was one of, you know how people post those pictures, and then you click on it, and you can't help but look at the rest of what their pictures are saying? I don't know if you guys get there, but I got one the other day that said this. That awkward moment. Do you ever get into that awkward moment when you've already said what three times, still have no idea what the person said, so you just agree? Anybody ever been there? Okay. I've been there. That means that we are in it. That's one of the results of, if you are in a room and you are paying attention to that thing, it might be the finances, it might be paying the bills, all those different things. When we get focused in there, it can make a big difference into how we interact with people around us. And with our spouse, if we're in that room as we're narrowly focused, and we don't even hear what she has to say, we send a message that we really don't want to send. Now, what's the other outcome of being a focus like that, of having our brains built like that? If there's a tragedy, if there's disaster in our families, if there are tense conversations that are going on, if you are going through just a real relational break in your marriage, what we do as guys is we take all of that hurt and all of that baggage and we shove it in one of those rooms and we lock it five times and we duct tape it and we seal it and we don't deal with it. And we go in all the other rooms and we do all the other normal things and we leave that room alone. And the message that sends to your wife is, it really doesn't hurt. It really doesn't matter. Look, he's doing all the normal things. It doesn't make a difference. And she's feeling something totally different. And the message that you send is, I don't care. And you don't even mean to, because you've locked it all up. You're not dealing with that. You're in those other rooms. And so that's the way we process. It's like that map on the back of the door. Women are completely opposite.
As much as I would actually kind of like to be able to be that hotel map sometimes, I'm not like that at all. I'm more like a ball of yarn, or if you're going to go with the spaghetti analogy, I'm hoping that the analogy is cooked spaghetti, because it's messy and touches everywhere. Things are just all interconnected. An example would be that this is a real life example. I got up one morning, got in the shower, saw the shampoo, thought of the hairdresser in Rockford. I missed the hairdresser in Rockford. I really liked her. I liked how she cut my hair. I just liked her. She's a good friend. We moved. I haven't heard from her in a while. Didn't get a Christmas card from her. She didn't get a Christmas card from us either, because when the Christmas cards came, even though we looked at them together, Brody didn't like them. So we didn't mail them. And now I'm irritated. And I get out of the shower, and he has a frustrated wife.
And she comes out. I sit her in happy. And she comes out, and I'm in trouble. And I'm really not sure how that happened.
It's all interconnected and woven together. Another example would be that when Brody and I are talking about something, he is looking for me to go from point A to point B, really more like this, from point A to point B. And I intend to go from point A to point B. And as I start talking, I realize, oh, he doesn't know this. And if he knew this, that would help him understand where I'm going better. So I take this little, you know, loop to get him in the know. And then I get back up and I keep going where I'm going. And then there's another little tangent, because there's another thing that I realized that if he just had this background knowledge, it would help him to better understand this when we get to the end. And he thinks I'm wandering aimlessly. And really, I'm getting there. There's just so much more to it than just A to B.
And if I don't realize that, guys, which I have caught myself, I catch myself doing this. Would you get to the point? Would you get to the point? And then I have to check myself.
Not out loud.
No, in my mind. Would you get to the point? But when I get that in my mind, a red flag should go up. A red flag should go up that says, huh, I don't consider what she's saying to be worth listening to because I just want her to get to the end result. Mm-hmm. And that's a dangerous place. If we look at our wives and say, would you just give me the information? I really don't want your take on it. That's a dangerous place to be. That's not how we want to be as husbands. And so when she gets to that place and she's giving me the background, I've come to respect that there's something that I need to know. And so I will listen so that when she gets done, I have a fuller picture. And I'll tell you, I have been saved from many a difficult relational circumstance by hearing all that she had to say, because it gave me a fuller background and I didn't step into a situation in a poor way because she got me to the place that I needed to be. And so I respect that a lot more now. It's not easy. We're not built that way, but it makes a difference.
You know, a little rabbit trail?
Yes. Okay.
That's why we ask you so many questions when you tell us something from point A to point B, and we're like, but what about, what did, how about, and you get so irritated with us because we're like, come on, tell me more, and you're like, there's nothing.
Well, there's something.
I just can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's me. All right, so we have those three things. The last thing that is an underpinning that I think we often leave out, and that is prayer. And coming to a men's conference in a church that's Christian-based, you would think, well, duh, I think you have to say that at the end. But I got to tell you guys, many times we look at God just like Tony described him this morning. God, you are God way out there, but I'm God in here. I have to figure out how to manage this. I have to figure out the solution to this. I have to figure out how to make this work. And we leave God way out there when he could be in here. And is it hard? Yeah, but how powerful is it when we look and say, okay, God, in my communication with my spouse, that sets the tone for a lot of things in our relationship. I don't want you to be God out there. I want you to be God in here. And to be able to open and say, all right, on a regular basis, we are going to pray about this. We are going to ask God not to be God out there, but to be God in the midst of us, is a powerful thing. Jeremiah 33:3 says, call to me and I will answer you and show you great and mighty things that you did not know. And in the understanding that comes between the spouses, we pray, God, would you be that great and mighty person? Would you be that God and come in here and help us understand each other, help us communicate so that we are the couple that you created us to be? We sang that song this morning, we are the light of the world, we are a city on a hill. Isn't that what we want to be in our marriages, in our oneness? We reflect the oneness that God is, a picture of who God is. In our forgiveness, we reflect a piece of how God forgives us. If we don't ask him to be in the midst of our communication, we are never going to be the light that we could be and do the things that he's created us to do as couples. And so prayer is a huge underpinning. And so let's go to that second level. We've got the underpinnings, we've got vocabulary, we've got tone, we've got body language, we've got processing, how that works, and we've got prayer. The next piece is that, what are some key practical things that we've been learning? These aren't going to be rocket science, and you're not going to look up and say, wow, they are such a genius couple up there. This is basic stuff that we all need to be reminded of. The first one, first thing that's a practical key is to be available.
Personally, I think being available is harder now than it's ever been. We are in a 24/7 kind of world. We have access to stuff all the time. I know just when I think about Brody, people have access to him through home phone, cell phone, texting, home email, work email, tweeting, Facebook. I mean, there's like so many ways that somebody can access us at this time. So it's important that we're aware of it and that we come up with ways to be available. Gary Chapman is an author, and he gives a great example of this. He talks about a father sitting on the floor with his child, rolling the ball back and forth, you know, your little two-year-old. And in that moment, it's just the two of them. The dad's not focused on the ball. He knows he's going to get to the other side. He's focused on the child that's sitting across from him. And even if that's a minute, it's time that they had together, that they were present together. If you change the scenario and you put the dad on the phone while he's rolling the ball back and forth, the child is no longer the focus. The dad's attention is diluted. And really, the primary focus is most likely the person that's on the phone. So then that whole moment is just lost.
And we've seen that. We were out to dinner at Olive Garden a couple months back. And we were there. I think somebody was watching Annika. We were there just kind of on a date. And across from us, across the aisle from us, was a mom and a daughter. And they were sitting there. And we were there for probably 35 or 40 minutes. And the entire time that mother and daughter were sitting there, mom was on the phone. And she was not talking to her daughter. Her daughter was there. And that mom probably could have gone home and said, hey, my daughter and I went to lunch. And really, that's not true. The person on the phone went to lunch with that mom. And that daughter was just kind of sitting there doing her own thing. And she wasn't available. And that's a really hard place to be as a kid. And if you treat your spouse like that, it's a really hard place to be in that spot, too.
And it happens when we're not even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. I'm making dinner. Our daughter comes up and starts hugging on me for something. Brody's talking. I'm not present. I have no idea what he's talking about because I have water boiling over and a four-year-old yanking at me, you know, who won't stop talking. So it's easy for it to happen. It's not like it's a difficult scenario to not be available. So in light of that, then, I know when I'm talking with Brody, we need to wait till our daughter's in bed, usually, or during nap, because then I can actually be available, mm-hmm. not worried she's going to come walking in and interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big one, we have to turn off the TV, put away the iPhones, most likely in another room. You know, the computer's got to get put away, the iPad, or whatever.
Apparently we have a lot of technology.
We have a lot of technology in our house. And this one hits home really for me because this is an area where I actually can feel really hurt. If I'm trying to talk to Brody and I'm telling him something and he looks over at the TV or the phone dings and there's a text message and he reads it or the phone actually rings and it's somebody calling for whatever reason, what that feels like is all that stuff is more important than me. So I'm trying to talk to you, but the game is more important. I'm trying to talk to you, but work is more important. Whatever it is, the golf match on Saturday is more important. Whatever it is, even though that's not necessarily what you mean, that's how it feels.
And so you have a sheet in front of you, and you turn over to the side that has a lot of blanks. Up in the upper right-hand corner, it says Activity 1. We all have our struggles with being available. Yours might not be the iPhone like mine is. Yours might be something else. Take a minute and just name, what are the barriers to you being available to communicate with your spouse in open ways? What might be those barriers? And some of you are like, well, I don't really want to write it down, but I encourage you to write it down because you're getting kind of fed from a fire hose today, and by the time you go home, you're going to forget a lot of different things. And so what are your barriers to being available to have a conversation or to communicate with your spouse? You get about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to just kind of think through that. More seconds. What you've just done is something I call naming my enemies. All right, when I play golf, my enemy is the the really hard slice to the right. And so I aim to the left so that if something happens, I get it back in the middle. If you name your enemies, when you pick up that phone, when you pick up that computer, when you get distracted by whatever, a red flag should go off in your mind. You said, hey, this is what distracted me from being available. How can I change that for a little bit of time right here to show my wife that I value her? And so availability is one really big thing. Second one, and this is a no-brainer, but it's so important, that is to listen, okay? Practical key to good communication in your marriage is to really listen. Listen to what James chapter 1, verse 19 says. It says, my brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And we live in a culture that actually flips that around. We are slow to listen, quick to speak, and quick to become angry. And you see it all around. And that's not how God's called us to be as men in our homes. And so how do you truly listen? What's the goal of listening? You know, you can hear the words that I say, and you might not actually hear what I'm saying. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? And so your wife just doesn't want you to listen. She wants to be heard. That's really at the core of what your wife wants from you. She wants to be heard. She wants her opinion to be understood. She wants to be heard. Now, how does that happen? Well, in listening to actually hear, you need to listen for both words and intent. And to be able to say, what's going on in between the lines? What am I doing? How can I read in between the lines? What's a way that you can help move that along? You can move that listening process along by listening for words and intent, but also by doing something that we teach elementary school kids all over the country all the time right now, and that's something called active listening. You know, and that is when I am able to, you can't do it in a car, it doesn't really work, you're not going to be able to do it in a room like this, but when I'm able to, my attention, when I show my wife that I'm listening, is my eyes, my shoulders, and my knees are square to her. Okay? And so that means that I am sitting looking at her, giving her my thought attention. My body is placed towards her and said, you know what? I'm going to give you my full and unencumbered attention. And you get it. And as soon as I start to turn like this, it sends a message, body language, that, oh, I've kind of checked out of this conversation. And so active listening is a key to good listening, and it sends a big message. Digging a little deeper. Sometimes we listen to a story and we kind of check out in the middle of it. I mean, I would never do that in my house. But sometimes we kind of check out in the middle of it. But really engaging our mind to say, I want to understand where you're coming from. I want to understand the environment that you're in. I want to understand the situation as it appears to you. Ask questions. Dig a little deeper, because when you ask for clarification, when you ask about the situation, she says, oh, I'm not just talking to a room, or I'm not just kind of getting through this part to get to the good part. He actually wants to understand. He wants to know. And so asking clarification, digging a little deeper. What happens when good listening is part of your relationship? Here's two really key things. If you're listening and you're really listening for intent and trying to understand, you show that you accept your wife as a voice in your home and a voice in your life. Now, you may think that you already do that, but I will tell you, if you did a survey of a lot of wives, including probably some of ours, many of them feel that they don't have a voice. They don't have a voice in our lives. We're going to do what we want to do. They don't have a voice in our homes many times, unless it has to do with caring for the children, because sometimes men are absent from that place. You heard the statistics this morning. And what you do when you really listen and when you really dig in is you look at her, and I look at Heather, and I say, I accept you as a voice in our family, an important voice in our home, and an important voice in my life. Now, that's a big deal to me. Heather has one of the best ears that I know. When I do speaking engagements wherever in the country or in this church, I will always, almost always, if we can figure it out, have her listen to me first. We'll sit in the living room, and I'll preach in the living room. It's really interesting to watch. But what I will do is I will ask her, what did you hear? What do I need to work on? And sometimes she'll go, this was great, this was great, this was great. Yeah, you better not do that. And a lot of times that, is the thing I was really excited about. And I have a choice. I can say, well, I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyways because I know what I'm doing. Or I can send her the message that I heard you. You have a voice in my life. I'm going to change that. And sometimes I have to be able to say, well, here's what I was trying to get to, and we work through it, and we come to a different conclusion. But sometimes I just have to say, you know what? She gets it at a different level than I do. I'm going to move that really fun thing to the side, and we'll go with these things. And what I do is I send a message that I accept you, and I also send another message, is that your voice is worth listening to. And there are all kinds of our wives that are in environments where they don't feel like their voice is worth listening to. We have no idea how the female mind deals with self-esteem, guys. Many of them, even when they look confident, some of the most confident-looking women in our culture today are suffering from a low self-esteem, and they don't think they're worth listening to. So they start to say it louder, and we feel intimidated probably by some of that voice coming at us. But really underneath that lies a self-esteem that's really suffering, and we have the chance to build into our lives and say, not only do I accept you, but you are worth it. You have really good things to say, and we get to do that by listening and really digging in and having those conversations in a different way. What happens when we don't listen? Here's the first thing. Distance happens when we don't listen. You know that the number one reason for divorce in America today is not finances, it's not affairs, it's not job loss, it's not tragedy, not any of those things. The number one reason for divorce in our country today is drift. It's when two people who were once very close stop communicating in positive ways and they start to drift. A little bit farther, a little bit farther, a little bit farther, a little bit farther, until they're not a married couple anymore. They're just good roommates. And you can probably name people that you know that they're not a couple, they're just good roommates. And sometimes we probably end up in those places in our homes. Well, how do we combat that? We listen, and it closes that distance, and it builds better communication. The second thing that good listening combats is it combats confusion. You know what? We live in a world that we are rushing all over the place. When we are not communicating with each other, when we're not listening, there is calendar chaos. There is parenting inconsistencies. Your kids know it. I have a 4.5-year-old, and she will go ask Heather this. Why can I do this? And Heather will say no, and she'll come ask me and say, can I do this? And sometimes I say yes, and she knows right away that we are not communicating. She's 4. She's figured us out already. And so when we're not listening to each other, when we're not communicating, we become inconsistent parents. And inconsistent parents to a 4-year-old is a game. Inconsistent parents to a teenager is disaster. You need to know that because their whole security system is shaken by the fact that their parents aren't on the same page. And so we get parent inconsistency, and then we send different messages to people outside our home. Instead of being that light, we send the message that, hey, we got God at the center of us, and we are just like everybody else. We're no different. And I'm not sure that's the message that we want to send. And so availability and listening. The third thing that's really important is to the power of the positive, to stay in the positive place.
A few years ago, the book The Love Dare came out around the same time as the movie Fireproof. And one of the parts of this book that I really like is an example about rooms that we have in our brain. We have a positive room and a negative room. When we start dating the person that we're going to marry, we see all the amazing things about them when we're with them and when we're not with them. We sit and ponder about how amazing they are. He's so intelligent. He's so handsome. He's so athletic.
Stop it.
All those things. And we sit in this room and we sort of spray paint it in big words all over the room. And we're just constantly thinking about and soaking in how amazing they are. We marry them. We start living with them. We realize there are these little annoying things that they do that we didn't know about. We get frustrated. We go to the negative room. We write it down. The danger is, every time they do something, we go to the negative room, we write it down, we start spending a lot of time in that room, and then it sort of becomes what we see. I'm looking for the negative. I'm not looking for the good things, because what I see about you are all those negative things that I'm thinking about all the time. I just lost my thought there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Paul asks us, tells us, in Philippians 4:8, to focus on whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So that's what I want to put my focus on with Brody. And doing that, in the end, when we get to a place that's a rough spot, if I have spent my time always focusing more on the positive than the negative, when that little thing comes up, I respond with a, Brody's not usually like that. I wonder what was happening. I wonder why he did that. I wonder what was going on. Mm-hmm. If I'm spending all my time in the negative room, I go, he did it again. He always does that. He is out to get me. Why does he do that? He just wants to make me mad. So really, it's all where you put your focus. So I would like you to take a minute on your sheet, turn it over to where it says Activity 2, and think for a minute about your wife and all the positive, good things about her. And we're going to ask you to do something with this, so please actually make the list.
Hopefully you're getting a really long list. Got people sitting and looking into the left trying to remember, huh? About 30 more seconds. And you're going to be able to finish this at another point in time.
So there's a lot of power in staying in the positive room. There's also even more power in using it to encourage and build someone else up. So in Thessalonians, we're told, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up. Sharing it, it just adds to it. I have no idea. Until we did this the first time, the things that Brody told me he liked about me that he thought were good, things that were good about me, I didn't know he liked thought those good things about me. I wouldn't have even identified them in myself. So it's a really powerful experience. Mm-hmm. So there's power in making time to share it with your wife. If you're not comfortable sitting down and having that conversation, Valentine's Day is 10 days away. That would be the most amazing Valentine's Day card ever. It would not get thrown in the garbage.
And now I'm stuck with doing that in mind.
No, you already did it.
That's true. I need to do it again.
Stormy Omardian wrote the book, The Power of a Praying Wife. Her husband wrote The Power of a Praying Husband. And she says in here, she sums it up really nicely. She says, love is diminished if we dwell on the negatives. Love grows if we focus on the positive.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got three things. Number four. Four out of the five key things is gain understanding. And, you might think, again, this is a no-brainer, but listen to what Solomon says. Solomon, who is considered one of the wisest men to ever live, in Proverbs says, blessed is the man who finds wisdom and gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay hold of her will be blessed. There's some strong words in there, especially after what Tony unpacked this morning about blessed and all these things about the life and the growing. And to understand that understanding is a tree of life. It means it feeds life into our relationships when we gain an understanding. Now, I want to remind you of some things that you might have forgotten when it comes to understanding, when it comes to getting clarification, when it comes to putting all of your cards on the table. There are some key things that we don't realize the power of. And so here's the first one. Never underestimate, in gaining understanding, never underestimate the power of your past, especially your family of origin, both yours and your wife's. Never underestimate the power of your past. This is something we glance over and we don't even think about. But Heather and I had to learn this the hard way. We were about 6 years into our marriage, and things just weren't clicking on the communication end. We were not getting along, and it didn't seem like we could come to resolution. And so we finally said, hey, we need somebody to help us walk through this type of thing and just give us some outside perspective and give us a little bit of wisdom on what's really going on, because we really want to be a strong couple. And so when we got there, we started talking about our families and the families we grew up in, and figured out pretty quickly that Heather's family really deals with confrontation on a regular basis. When there's something going wrong, they have a pretty heart-to-heart, head-to-head meeting about it, and they get it taken care of, and they address it directly. My family, we don't talk about things that are difficult. If there's something difficult, unless you just murdered the cat or did something to the house or wrecked the car, nobody is going to criticize you in our family. And so what happens is she would come in and there would be an issue and she would deal with it directly. I would hear in my place. My family didn't do that. So when she confronted me on something, the sky was falling. I must have done something awful. I didn't think this was awful. Why is she coming after me? And I would withdraw. And when I withdrew, she would get upset because she didn't think I cared about the whole thing. And really what we didn't have was the tools to even communicate because I was scared of that confrontation. She was comfortable with it, but she didn't realize what was going on with me. I didn't realize what was going on with her. And we had a huge mess. Huge mess. And all because of our families of origin. And there are so many places in our lives, guys, where our families of origin define how we deal with life. This is one of them, in our communication. Things that we might not even realize we do, they're just innate from how we grew up, affect our communication. Same with your wife, how she perceives you. If your wife had an angry dad, she's going to look at you like you're an angry person sometimes, and you're not angry. And all of that because the power of the past is significant. So never underestimate, in gaining understanding, the power of the past. Second thing, never underestimate the power of a small question. All right? This was very evident to me. I remember one day clearly walking into our house, and things just weren't right. Have you ever walked into your house and it's just, you know, something's just not right here? And immediately when something's not right, I go to, what did I do? What didn't I do? What should I have done that I didn't do? And now I figure she's upset with me. And so she's in the kitchen. She's doing whatever she's doing. I kind of put my bag down in the living room, walk around, steer clear. Maybe it'll kind of blow over and we'll be in good shape. And dinner time, it's still kind of not right. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to kind of keep to myself. I do my withdraw thing, okay? I'm going to withdraw a little bit. And, you know, so she starts to feel that I'm withdrawing, and she's getting kind of upset. And all of a sudden, we don't have an issue anymore. We have an issue plus emotion. And then we started to get a little bit further. Now we had an issue plus emotion. And finally, later that night, we had a little bit of a blow-up. This never happens in your home, I know. But you know what? This is what happened was, is we got back to the beginning of it, had nothing to do with me. Nothing. I walked into the house. The reason things were a little bit off is because she had an awful day at school. And something had happened with a parent meeting and something had happened in a staff meeting that just were dragging her down, and she was seething underneath about that, not about me. If I'd walked into the house and felt it was a little different and given it a little time to blow over and it still didn't, if I'd walked up to her and said, hey, did I do something to upset you? Very small question. Clear answer right there would have been no. Suddenly, we don't have the issue plus the emotion plus the emotion plus the blowout. We have a conversation. The power of a small question can do a whole lot of stuff in trying to gain understanding. Did I do something to make you upset? Did I do something to annoy you? Did I do something to make you angry? Sometimes that simple question can go a long way. Third thing, don't underestimate the power of your past. Don't underestimate the power of a small question. Don't underestimate the power of reflection. All right? Now, when we hear reflection, we think, I think hammock. I think hammock, sitting looking at the sky, reflecting on the world, sleeping, waking up. That's not what we're talking about. In a situation, the power of reflection is incredibly strong. Basically, what happens is we've been taught a skill, and we teach skills to kids that are called I feel statements and reflections. Okay? If a kid comes up and he says, I feel scared because you did this, that's a message that I need to pay attention to. And if Heather comes up to me and says, I feel hurt because you're on your phone, I need to be able to say, what I hear from you is that because I'm on my phone, your feelings are not being valued. And she would say, yes. But sometimes she might come up and say, I feel hurt when you're on the phone. And when I walked in, I was on the phone with the senior pastor. Pretty important conversation if you work in the job that I'm at. And so what I hear is, I feel mad when you're on the phone. And so she says, I feel hurt when you're on the phone. I hear you're mad because I'm on the phone when I walked in the door and we have a disconnect. And what she can do is say, I feel this. And I need to be able to say, I hear you saying this. And if they match up, we have a conversation. If they don't match up, I've got a filter on and I've got to be careful. And guys, here's what I want you to know. When you hear two words, I feel, come out of your wife's mouth, it should put up a red flag in your mind. And the red flag should automatically go up in your mind and close your mouth. This is what I've learned. If I hear the words I feel, I close my mouth because I need to hear what she feels. Because I will come up with excuse, I will come up with rationalization, and what I've done in that is, in my rationalization of everything, I have devalued her feelings. And I didn't mean to. I wanted her to understand my point of view. It's actually a really good thing that I'm trying to do, not the moment. When she says I feel, I listen. And that's something that's key for us. If your wife says, I feel this, you need to listen. And then to be able to look back at her and say, what I hear you saying is this, then all of a sudden we have understanding. We have communication. And that's what we really want in our relationships. And so understanding is a key concept. And we have to understand, when we're understanding, the power of our past, the power of small questions, and the power of reflection are really important. The last thing that's in these key concepts is the love languages. This is something that's critical.
Gary Chapman wrote a book a long time ago called The Five Love Languages. What's great about it is that it helps you understand how you give and receive love and how the person you married gives and receives love. You most likely don't give and receive love in the same way. There are five languages. There are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. So, as an example, my model in my house, actually, I would think if my parents took the test, they would both actually be acts of service, or it would be up pretty high on their list. So that's what I saw as my model of how you show someone you love them, and that's how I spent a significant amount of time at the beginning of our marriage showing Brody love. I would try to make sure the house was perfect. I would make these meals, and I would do all these things to try to serve him and show him how much I loved him. And I just never got the response out of it I was really looking for.
And I love those things, but really, if you were to look at my love languages, my top one is physical touch, which goes far beyond sex. It actually becomes the point where there's physical touch when she helps me feel close, like when she puts her arm through mine, or she holds my hand, or when we're sitting in church and she just puts her hand on my knee. That's physical touch. That's affirming. That's the way I feel love. And that was also the way I was trying to show love to her. And it kind of backfired on me. You're sensing that a lot of things backfire on me, aren't you? Because they knew. But when we would get in a difficult conversation, I automatically, because physical touch, reaffirmation, confirming that I'm still loved is important to me, I naturally thought it was for her. And so we'd get in a tense conversation, and I would move closer and put my hand on her knee, and I couldn't figure out why that wasn't having a positive effect. And so we did one of those personality evaluations, you know, where you're a lion, a bear, a golden retriever, all of those different things. Okay, we did that, and there were two sheets on there. Do communicate with Heather this way. Don't communicate with the don'ts of communicating with Heather. And about halfway down the list on that evaluation, it says, if you're in a tense conversation, do not get within 3 feet of Heather. And I was like, light bulb on. I was like, no wonder this is backfiring. But my natural love language, I was trying to show her love through that. And when we finally came to an understanding of how she receives love and how I receive love, it changed our communication in the way of loving each other almost completely. And it's been a huge bonus for us. Now, I realize that we are at 12:08, and you guys have got to get to some different places. So here's what I want you to do.
Wait.
Oh, go ahead.
If you want to know your spouse's love language.
Oh, there you go.
www.5lovelanguages.com.
Free.
It is free. Yeah. It's Gary Chapman's website. They'll tell you what, they'll rank them for you. To get more in depth, you would want the book, but that would at least give you a starting point.
All right, on your way out, we were going to share with you 10 keys. There's a guy named Mark Merrill who's done a lot of research, and he put out a list of 10 things that your wife needs to hear from you. 10 things that wives need to hear from their husbands. And we put that on a handout. Hopefully it's going to be at the doors as you go out. I'm hoping that they're there. But what I want you to do, you're going to get a two-sided handout as you go. It's 10 things your wife needs to hear from you. And on the other side, it's 10 things that a husband needs to hear from a wife. Okay? This is a conversation starter. Do not go home and use this as ammo. But you're going to be like, ha ha, I need to hear this, I need to hear this, I didn't hear this. Take it home. Over in this Valentine's time, say, hey, do you really need to hear these things? And as they turn it over, say, hey, here's some of the top things that I could really hear from you that would encourage, affirm, that would connect us, and we'll be better able to communicate. Let me pray for you before you guys leave, and then I'll let you go. God, we thank you for giving us wives that love us, that make us better. You have not given them to us by accident. They are there on purpose. And God, you want us to be a picture of who you are to the community around us and to the world around us by how we live as married couples. So God, I pray for the men in this room, that even some of the small things that we remind each other of in communication, of being available, of listening, of searching for understanding, these are things that can go a long way towards helping us become the couples that you create us to be. Give us the time to dig into some of these things. Give us the desire to really move forward in some of these directions. And God, may you be in the midst of us as we talk, as we grow as married couples, as we raise families. God, so that we might make a difference in this world by just paying attention to a small thing like communication. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks for the pen.
You're welcome.
One down there.
Mormon.
Yeah, it is. They went to Wittenberg to watch the movies, but yes, movies were not allowed.
Yeah. So yeah, so the dollar movie.
It could be worse. You might have to see him.
Oh my God! What are you saying? Bubbles.